Hello, this is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 29th of May 2015. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Lorna Chorley and Michael Turner. Your readers today are Norma York.
Hello.
Brian Woodruff.
Hello.
And Michael Wyatt.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Maria Head. The main headlines this week are: rape victim finally gets her apology from police, challenging plans for town, and Angela follows Eileen's reign. So, may we now have the story behind the first headline, please, Norma.
Rape victim finally gets her apology from police by Andrew Napier. Hampshire Police has apologised and paid £20,000 to a Winchester rape victim they wrongly accused of lying. The woman, who cannot be identified for legal reasons, was arrested in 2012 on suspicion of perverting the course of justice and tried to kill herself as a result. It was only after her mother complained that 6 months later the police investigated properly and secured the evidence that resulted in the rapist's conviction at the city's Crown Court. The woman, now aged 20, had told officers that the attacker's DNA was on a T-shirt, but it was not sent for analysis. The attacker, Liam Ford, was later convicted of the rape and jailed in 2013 for 5 years. Simon Hayes, the County Police Crime Commissioner, described the case as unacceptable and added, "I am appalled by the way the victim and her family have been treated in this case and would like to express my heartfelt sympathy to them." The woman's lawyer, Delabina Dasgupta, Delabina Dasgupta, said, "This is a horrific case. What is most shocking is the fact that it is clear the officers didn't believe her pretty much from the start. Within 2 days, they had started investigating her. It is pretty shocking to most people that it happened in 2012. There was DNA on the rapist's T-shirt, and she told the police this. He had denied any contact at all. We have never got to the bottom of why almost instantly the police decided not to believe the victim and investigated her rather than the rapist." Chief Superintendent David Powell said, "Our initial assessment and handling of this case was very poor, and we are not proud of our response. We have already personally apologised to the victim and her mother, and I repeat, we are sorry for letting her down." He stressed the force does take seriously complaints of sexual assault. 4 officers were investigated by Hampshire Standards Department after the Independent Police Complaints Commission was alerted. 1 officer received a written warning, and 3 were allowed to retire or resign, with no action being taken against them. In all, 10 have been given management action.
Challenging plans for town. That's provided by Duncan Geddes. The picture accompanying this article shows how a regenerated Silver Hill could look under plans drawn up to challenge the Winchester scheme's controversial developer. Conservation group Save Britain's Heritage has commissioned an alternative to TIAA Henderson Real Estate's £150 million plans for the city centre with a new market and reopened river. It comes after Winchester City Council rejected the chance to extend their deal with Henderson, raising the possibility that the developer could be ditched from next week. Councillors rejected an offer from Henderson amid questions over their financial figures and threats of a second legal challenge from Councillor Kim Gottlieb, who is battling the scheme and calling for a rethink. Save Britain's Heritage, SAVE, which led the restoration of Peninsula Barracks in the 1990s, proposes using the current bus station as a market, reopening the river off Eastgate Street and erecting buildings of no more than four stories to protect views of Winchester Cathedral. Like Henderson's current scheme, the early designs by Hugh Thomas architects contain shop, car parking and affordable housing. However, they retain the antiques market at King's Walk and scrap a proposed new bus station off the Broadway. Marcus Binney, Save's executive president, told the Chronicle, "We think this is an opportunity to bring a new life into the attractive way. Trustees say construction should begin in 2017, contrasting claims from the council's legal advisers that fresh plans would set the scheme back by 6 years or more. It came after two crunch meetings last Thursday, which heard how Henderson has been submitting files it hopes will set in motion a version of the scheme approved in 2009. A £150 million regeneration, including shops, homes, car parking, a bus station and 100 affordable flats. The development agreement tying Henderson to the council is set to expire on June the 1st. Cabinet snubbed Henderson's offer to extend this to October the 31st, meaning the scheme could go through before an independent report into the saga expected in September. During more than 6 hours of debate across two Guildhall meetings, further questions were asked of Henderson's claim that the 2009 plans, which it wanted to replace on the basis they wouldn't make enough profit, were now viable. Those claims must be accepted by civic chiefs and two sets of newly hired advisers before the scheme can go ahead. Former Labour councillor Patrick Davis said, "It seems to me, frankly, but beyond belief, that it could be argued that what is now viable was not a viable matter a few weeks ago. There's no proof in any of the public papers I've seen, and I believe we're in real danger of being taken for a ride again on this." Mr. Warren cited changing market conditions as a possible explanation. "I've never actually seen a viability appraisal of the 2009 scheme that says it isn't viable," he said. "I suspect that the question of viability is not turning on the 10% required profit issue. It's turning on whether anybody's prepared to invest money in it." Henderson, meanwhile, is set to fight the judicial review decision, which quashed their preferred 2014 scheme, at a hearing in November. Howard Bone, the council's legal chief, said that Henderson could try again to change the scheme should it win an appeal. And this is covered by the plan, as shown, as mentioned earlier, of the Hugh Thomas Architects outline sketch of how Save Britain's Heritage alternative plans for Winchester Silver Hill redevelopment could look, overlooking over the Broadway and bus station from Winchester Guildhall. And there's pictures of Silver Hill modelling of the existing plans and of two councillors, Kim Gottlieb and the council leader, Stephen Godfrey.
Angela follows Eileen's Reign is the title of this piece by Lauren Howard. It was a rare moment in Winchester's history when one female mayor handed over century-old chains to another Mrs. Mayor. And the 816th Mayor of Winchester, Angela Clear, was all smiles as she received them from her friend and colleague, Eileen Berry. Councillor Berry gave a charming wink as she bowed out graciously during the formal ceremony, congratulating Councillor Clear and describing her as warm and after her own heart. "She's going to make a wonderful, wonderful mayor, believe me," she added. She handed over the mayoral jewel, ring, brooch and the keys to the city, but chuckles soon emitted from the packed-out Guildhall as she tried to keep hold of the mayoral bracelet. Councillor Clare said, "I've got to thank the residents of Wickham and Knowle for re-electing me, because without them I wouldn't be here, and I must also thank Peter, my husband, for his support and understanding throughout. I'd never imagined when I moved to Winchester 40 years ago that this would ever happen to me. Her selected three charities are Countess Mountbatten Hospice, Naomi House and Jack's Place and Rowan's Hospice. Stephen Godfrey said of the retiring mayor, "As a result of being Eileen, she emits kindness and warmth. She's not formal or stuffy, and neither was her mayoralty. Darling may not be one of the formal terms of address, but it has been firmly part of the lexicon of the 850th term of office. She raised £40,000 for her nominated charities over the year." And she said, "When I said I was going to bring colour and gaiety, you didn't know what you were in for," she said. "I've had a ball. I've loved every minute of it. I was able to give, give and give." In an even rarer moment, another woman, Councillor Jane Rutter, was elected Deputy Mayor.
That concludes the headlines this week. And now we continue with death notices. The following deaths have been announced. Falloon, Jerry Falloon, after a long illness. Fiander, Thomas Fiander, peacefully at home. Laws, Fred Laws. Hillier, Donald Arthur Hillier, peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 88. Innes, Linda Innes, peacefully at home. Lovell, Chris Lovell, peacefully at home. Lowe, Michael James Lowe. McLaughlin, Anne McLaughlin, aged 77. Page, Brian Robert Page, in the Countess Mountbatten Hospice, aged 66. Perkins, Dorothy Perkins, aged 96. Thompson, Jan Thompson, peacefully, aged 92. Turner, David Charles Turner, peacefully at North Hampshire Hospital, aged 86. Wilkinson, Irene Wilkinson, peacefully, aged 73. Christian Comment this week is read by Norma. Thank you, Norma.
Christian Comment by Roland Ream, entitled Structures Can Enable Life Together. Structures are not that important, but they are always necessary. A bridge without a structure would collapse, and likewise any organisation that wants to bear weight over time needs one too. Structures are like the bones of a body. They are not responsible for life, but they allow life to happen. Not many Christians seem to care about church structures. If the attendance at the recent Churches Together in Winchester AGM is anything to go by, the average Christian seems happy to belong to a particular church, to worship there, and to be a member of a home study group, and to volunteer for some public service, perhaps as a street pastor. That is where the life is to be found. So where does that leave the structure from a previous generation? Believers used to think more institutionally about their beliefs and were suspicious of other brands of Christianity. Now they are much more relaxed about the small differences between churches and much more interested in how to engage in society. If structures are necessary, they need to support these new patterns of faith and belonging. Churches Together has come up with a good plan. One element is to build a website where everyone can see the main things being done together in the city. Joining the dots is part of what the organisation should be about. It's a humble task, but one which should help individuals not to feel isolated and prevent groups from reinventing the wheel. A website would be a very flexible structure to enable better communication. A second element is to identify key areas in which Christians want to work, each led by someone passionate about it, a champion. This will allow vision and resources to be shared and stories to merge, which should encourage valuable service. Establish projects such as street pastors and basics banks could be joined by work in other areas, such as the care of the elderly. Finally, the church leaders and representatives will lightly steer what is going on to ensure that this garden of good works grows within bounds and in harmony. A structure seems to be emerging that will help the average Christian to connect both with others and also a bigger picture of what is going on. These bare bones seem to bear the weight put on them and enable Christians to enjoy their life together. For those outside the Christian community, the new structures offers a way of accessing the services that churches provide. Christenings, weddings and funerals used to provide the standard points of connection with society. These gave the sense that the church was available for others. Now that these are less popular, other ways must be offered to show a Christian willingness to serve. Having churches together, then, means Christians sharing worship and being linked together across their various faith communities. But it also means churches serving society as one body, united in a desire to see all in need, helped and blessed. And that again was by Roland Ream.
And now we have letters to the editor. And the first letter is read by Brian.
And that's points to note. And it's written by three people, which I'll mention first. Michelle Price, manager of Winchester Church's Night Shelter. Chris Dixon, chief executive of Andover and District MenCap. Leanne Smith, chief executive of Winchester Housing Trust. And together they've said, "Sir, with reference to your article, Landlords Claim Millions in Benefit, of Chronicle May the 7th, we feel that we've been misrepresented in the report and would like to make the following points. The Night Shelter, as a registered charity and not a private landlord, offers support and temporary housing to between 100 to 440 homeless individuals most years, and we are proud of the range of services and support that we and other charities provide. We charge residents only £3 a night for bed, breakfast, evening meal and vital support, which includes advocacy, counselling, budgeting and IT support, nutrition and cookery lessons. We are in the first port of call for those in crisis, and our priority is to support our residents out of homelessness and not to profit from them. Housing Benefit is one of several essential funding sources for us and other charities. It helps us to provide and maintain our incredibly valuable service, without which hundreds of people in Hampshire will be facing homelessness each year. All the money we receive from Housing Benefit payments goes back into the running of the communal areas of the Night Shelter and enables us to better provide for those homeless people. We work closely with the City Council's Benefits Office, who scrutinise our housing benefit charges, which have not been raised since 2012 and are known to be among the lowest in the area. Andover and District MenCap deliver a housing service in support with people with a learning disability to live as independently as possible. All of the people they support have a learning disability, and many would not be able to secure a tenancy without support. Every single penny they receive across their service provision and more is invested into the delivery of their services. We feel it's important that our charities, such as ours, should not be confused with private landlords who may be seen to profit from those in receipt of housing benefit."
This letter comes from E. Mayer, who lives in Chester Road in Winchester, and it's headed, "Ed is no Marxist." "Sir, I can forgive John Airey, who wrote a letter in May the 14th, and people like him, a certain amount of triumphalism. But referring to Ed Miliband as a Marxist is rather childish and stupid. Ed Miliband is from an academic socialist background, but he's no more a Marxist than David Cameron is a fascist. To speak in those terms is just crude and simplistic. Ed Miliband is a centre-left moderate in the way David Cameron is a centre-right moderate. The overriding reason that the Tories achieved such a strong result is that people wanted a stable government and were apprehensive about a Labour-SNP alliance. In the weeks before the election, Ed Miliband convinced many doubters that he was sincere and genuine in his vision of a fairer Britain. But people's fear and uncertainty was compounded by the open hostility of the Tory press. Much uncertainty lies ahead, especially over Europe. E. Mayer, Chester Road, Winchester.
Limits to Housing, written by Karen McCleary of Hookpick Farm Lane, Kingsworthy. Sir, I could not disagree more with your correspondent, Aurora Eastwood, on the housing crisis, who said that land around the cities, towns and villages need to be built on to provide more housing, letters May 21st. Yes, we have a housing crisis, but to cover more of our green and pleasant countryside in brick and concrete will be a disaster. We have hundreds of acres of brownfield sites which should be utilised first, leaving the countryside as a crucial asset to be enjoyed and to mitigate carbon emissions. Yes, thankfully, the planning application to build 57 houses in Kingsworthy on a much-loved open space was rejected. But let us not forget that 240 new houses will be built in the village over the next few years, in addition to 2,000-plus being built on open fields at Barton Farm, less than a mile and a half away. Surely there must be a limit to the amount of housing this already crowded little island can take. Again, that was by Karen McCleary, Hookpit Farm Lane, Kingsworthy.
And the next letter is also about housing, entitled Housing Policies. Sir, it's not unusual for politicians to abandon manifesto commitments when they get into government, or at least by the time they're voted out. Just to save us all a lot of time and campaign effort, I would suggest that the re-elected Steve Bryan, that he urged David Cameron to ditch the extension of right to buy to housing association stock. The selling off of council houses without building replacements has been a disaster, and we now have a situation where vast sums of public money are paid to private landlords in housing benefit because working families can't afford commercial rents. Many former council houses, now converted for multiple occupation to maximise profits, have ended up in investment portfolios, not in family ownership. The eventual acquisition of housing association properties, as it inevitably gets sold on, will prove even more lucrative, given that much of it is situated on prime sites alongside building dwellings, private building dwellings, where market values continue to rocket. Given that the national minimum wage is currently £6.50 an hour, the idea that young and low-paid people can aspire to buy in a city like Winchester, where at the top end a two-bedroom terrace house near Oram's Arbour can be offered for £750,000, and is crazy. We need to be building social housing with controlled rents as a matter of urgency and not selling off what's left over. Over to you, Steve. And that's from Karen Barrett of Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
This letter comes from Gary Honey, who lives in St Giles Hill, Winchester, and it's titled Voices Silenced. Sir, Henry Beaufort was one of several judges who condemned Joan of Arc to death in 1431. The letter from Andrew Payne in the Chronicle of May 21st addressed issues in Duncan Geddes's piece on the link between Joan and Henry, Chronicle, 14th of May. But there are still two important points to make. Firstly, although many Frenchmen were involved in the trial and execution of Joan, they were fighting against fellow countrymen out of loyalty to their liege lords, such as the Duke of Burgundy, who paid for their services fighting for the English cause. We now call it the Hundred Years' War, and it was not simply Englishmen against Frenchmen. It was a dynastic war in which Henry Beaufort, a close family relation of Henry IV, Henry V and Henry VI, bankrolled the English military expedition using funds drawn largely from the wealthiest see in England, which is, of course, Winchester. Henry Beaufort was already Chancellor of England when he succeeded William of Wickham as Bishop of Winchester in 1404. He'd also officiated in the marriage of his nephew Henry IV at Winchester Cathedral the previous year, and Beaufort was made a cardinal in 1426 and nearly missed being elected Pope. He would have been the first English Pope since Adrian IV in the 12th century. This brings me to the second point. It was not the French or the English who wanted Joan silenced. It was the Church. Joan's claim to hear voices from God was an affront to the Catholic Church and challenged the power of the established clergy. The Church was determined to secure a prosecution for her heresy. Even a weak French king, Charles VII, wasn't going to protect a peasant girl from the wrath of an ecclesiastical court, as he relied on the Church for his legitimacy as an anointed king. And that's from Gary Honey, St Giles Hill.
Human impact. Sir, a Winchester conference on climate change, according to your report of November the 26th, was told that the activities producing heavy carbon footprint included visiting families, having children and pets, and getting divorced. To put it more shortly, and save paper, ink and energy, why didn't the speaker simply say, being human? Though he could have included organising a conference attended by more than 100 people from across Hampshire and the country, let's hope they all came by bicycle, and that the conference was held outdoors, or at least in an unheated hall with no lights on. But why didn't they just use the internet? Because most of them know the value of human contact, I guess. Climate change is a serious issue. Must its activists include buffoons? Stephen Hugh Jones, East Harting, Petersfield.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860 836 or you could email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk or you could write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO 23 8AL. And looking back, we begin with the news from 200 years ago. Thank you, Brian.
And that is May the 22nd, 1815. Maltsters acquitted of their charges. Winchester, informations have lately been laid by two surveyors general of the area excise authorities that several maltsters have made it their practice to keep barley in the couch, compressed and harder than it would have been if some means or other had not been needed to compress and make it so close as to prevent its swelling, which makes each party liable to a fine of £100. On the day fixed by magistrates for hearing the complaint, the Surveyors General attended as witnesses, and the magistrates, being of the opinion they had not substantiated the charge, the several defendants were acquitted. And from London, on the French frontiers, preparations for a tremendous conflict seem to indicate a near commencement of hostilities, but by intelligent persons it is conjectured that more than a week will yet elapse before the dreadful collision, as the Allies are supposed to have adopted a plan suggested by the Duke of Wellington in a Grand Council of War at Vienna. Since that time, another ineffectual attempt at negotiations with Austria had been made by Bonaparte. The utmost gloom is said to prevail in Paris, and desertions are so numerous.
This piece comes from 100 years ago, May the 22nd, 1915. Italy decides to join allies in war. The momentous intelligence was received yesterday morning that Italy has at last decided to enter into the conflict on the side of the Allies. Every preparation has been made by that country for intervention. The ministry has been accorded full powers of war and for its entire duration. And Italy's adhesion to the Allies is certain to have a serious influence upon the future course of the struggle. During the first part of the week, the French and British forces have gained important successes in the West. But for the last few days, there has been a lull in the fighting. Winchester. The mayoress of Winchester announces by advertisement a pocket handkerchief day, in which she hopes to collect 1,000 pocket handkerchiefs for use on the ambulance ship Asturias, and invites persons to bring or send her at least one coloured or white handkerchief to the Abbey House on that day. And we anticipate that Mrs. Edmead's excellent idea will meet with a ready response on the part of the public, and hope that not only 1,000, but one double that number of these necessary articles will be got together as a result of her appeal.
50 years ago... May the 22nd, 1965. Schemes postponed due to grant cuts. More than 20 road schemes in Hampshire have had to be postponed to cope with a 206,910 cut in the grant allocation from the Ministry of Transport to Hampshire County Council. Schemes scheduled for the current financial year, which have had to be postponed, included working on the Reading Fareham Road between Alton Watercress Beds and the junction with the Alton Basingstoke Road, and at Woodside Farm, West Tisted, estimated to cost £3,000. Widening and realignment of the Winchester Andover Road between Southbridge and Butcher's Corner at Werwell, £4,000, and improvement to the Alton Borden Road between Ashdell and Windmill Hill, £5,000, and at Conderford Park, £6,000. Members of the Hampshire County Council, Basingstoke Borough Council, and the Greater London Council, and representatives of the national and local press and of industries and sporting organisations from the Basingstoke area were invited to a special gathering at Basingstoke on Wednesday, but the message given was not for them, but for the mass of the local population. For, of the £375,000 needed to build and equip the sports centre at Basingstoke, which will be the envy of the country, all but 79,000 has been promised or pledged, and the remainder must come directly from the pockets of the public.
And now, 25 years ago, on May the 18th, 1990, man recovering after IRA attack. A Winchester man is recovering in hospital after being injured in the IRA bomb explosion in Eltham on Monday. Mr. Trevor Hill sustained two fractured ribs and head injuries after the bomb exploded at the Royal Army Educational Corps, injuring seven civilians. He's recovering well, confirmed Mrs. Pamela Hills from the family home in Hairstock Close, Winchester. When I left the hospital this morning, he was sitting up in bed, eating scrambled eggs for breakfast. He's very cheerful and hasn't shown any signs of shock yet. He was bruised and pummeled. Next, complete plans for the Upper and Lower Peninsula barracks site could be implemented in 3 to 5 years, a Crown Estate representative said in Winchester this week. At a meeting to introduce detailed plans for the Lower Barracks site, Mr. John Ellingford, Estate Manager for Urban Property outside Central London, also gave a general outline of plans for the important archaeological site of the Upper Barracks. The conceptual master plan for the Upper Barracks is limited by the architectural information, which we hope to have soon, he said.
And next, we will have Chronicle comment, which will be read by Michael. This will be followed by First Person, read by Brian, And then Norma will read Belgarum's alternative look at the news. So could we start with you, please, Michael?
It's the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, and I notice from interest it says in our 243rd year, which is interesting, isn't it? Headed, "Shocking, how young rape victim treated." It seems incredible in the 21st century that something like our front page story can happen. A teenage Winchester girl complains of rape. The police fail to carry out basic measures and instead arrest her and threaten her with criminal charges. The mother complains and eventually the police do their job and the rapist is convicted and jailed for 5 years. Now, £20,000 worth of public money has been awarded to recompense the victim. Among the most worrying things is that most of the police officers who were at fault have been allowed to retire or resign. There are far too many instances of this in the public sector. It undermines much of the good work that has been done in encouraging people to report sexual assaults.
Now we have First Person by Joanna Lewis, entitled Hellish Hounds. I can't help noticing that every other advert on TV seems to have a Dachshund in it. They really are the IT dog of the moment. There's one jogging with Jessica Ennis, one dressed as Hank Marvin, another one drops onto a sofa by mini parachute. Most recently, there's a rather splendid little chap trotting along a beach promenade somewhere hot. Of course, the breed has long been the darling of designers, aristocrats and painters. David Hockney repeatedly drew Stanley and Bodgy. "These two dear little creatures are my friends," he wrote unapologetically. He was captivated by the warm shapes they made when curled up together, their sadness and their delights. Now the breeds have become hugely popular again as pets in this country. Hampshire has its own Dachshund Lovers Facebook group, and recently 10 sausage dogs took their owners on a joint expedition outside Winchester. It's all a far cry from the period after the First World War, when newspapers reported a cruel spate of Dachshund kicking because of their German ancestry. This surge in popularity had got me a bit worried, though. One might well think after watching the adverts, these mini bars on legs are A, easily trainable, B, docile, and C, naturally sociable. But the seasoned groundsman at our local park insists the only breed of dog that's ever been attacked by, he's ever been attacked by, are Dachshunds. He's often seen male joggers kitted up and in full stride, suddenly forced to break into an impromptu river dance manoeuvre as they try to shake off a pair of barking chipolatas from their ankle area. Or toddlers can run up excitedly, thinking they've stumbled on the best, most cutest thing in the world, a pencil case on legs, only to be met by a wall of sound that can be make your ears bleed. I can totally vouch for these incidents, as Dachshunds in question are usually my own. But, dear reader, before you rush to judge, spare a thought for the owners. Many, like me, had no idea they were buying descendants of a cross between a Doberman and a footstool. We had no idea that something that small survived because of extreme intelligence, stubbornness, and major craftiness. It bought mine, as I remember, as a child, seeing a photograph of my aunt holding a pair of sweet-faced daxes in Kenya, and written on the back was "Gypsy, eaten by a lion 3 months later." After owning two, I'm surprised the lion didn't come off worst. I did try a dog trainer, but after a while she said there was little more she could do. Their speed is astonishing. When the postman comes to the door, I don't think there's an animal on earth that can move that fast other than Boris Johnson as a girls' allowed after party. Territorial doesn't come close to describing them. If they take against a boyfriend, it's usually terminal. Try having a close relationship with someone who has in the sandbags of his cars before he can approach the sofa. So greedy and constantly looking for food are they that my life is reduced to a constant battle not to give in to those pleading eyes, forlorn expressions and waggy tails. If you give in, it's fatal. A slimline schnitzel can turn overnight into a zeppelin on legs. I know the feeling. Meanwhile, their partner in crime, a standard wirehead dachshund who holidays with them from time to time, has such a sense of humour that his favourite trick is to wait until I'm out before he raids the fruit bowl, depositing avocado stones across the carpet. Then they all sit back, and as you stagger in carrying shopping bags, full of their food, no doubt, they calmly watch you slip up and go flying, legs akimbo. There's only one option left, I'm afraid, to get an agent.
Well, after that amusing recount, Bellagaram. Security officer in a 100-mile ride for Nepal. A security officer is gearing up for a 100-mile off-road cycle ride to raise money for victims of the Nepal earthquakes. Dave Kirby, senior security officer at Winchester Law Courts, will ride through the South Downs National Park on May the 30th and 31st. He is raising money for the Disasters Emergency Committee, which is supporting millions of people in Nepal who have been affected by two quakes on April the 25th and May the 12th. Mr. Kirby has already raised £400, £50 over his target. To donate, go online at justgiving.com/Dave/Kirby7. And there's a very charming picture of a very happy gentleman clutching his bicycle with a bright red shirt, already prepared to go off cycling. And another cycling story. Cyclist heads off after injury. A Winchester cyclist is back in the saddle after an accident which could have threatened her annual charity trek. Jane Hoff of the Ruffield Close Hairstock has set off on a 10,000K 11-day cycle across Europe months after breaking her elbow. Her 21st solo journey crossing Germany to raise money for Christian Aid started on Wednesday, but it may not have happened at all after a biking accident days after her 2014 trip to Corsica. Miss Hoff said, "I was obviously distracted and did not notice a large overhanging weed across the road. It got tangled in my wheel and I fell over the handlebars and broke my elbow and got knocked out despite wearing a helmet. My elbow is now fastened together with a large metal plate thanks to the excellent surgeon at Winchester Hospital, and I have been gradually getting back to cycling fitness." She added, "We are all especially aware of the need of aid when we hear of disasters like that in Nepal recently. Sadly, in some parts of the world, disaster is a daily occurrence and Christian Aid is always there to offer help." New site is needed for car boot sale. The weekly car boot sale at Winchester's Cattle Market car park has become something of an institution, as well as raising thousands of pounds a year for local charities. But the future of the location is in doubt as the City Council wants to develop the site for offices and homes. That raises the question of where the sale ground could move to. No central car parks are anything like the same size. And finally, ex-PM's boat donated to charitable trust. Languishing in a broker's yard sat a sad, lowly bowed section of a boat once famously wrecked. It was none other than Sir Edward Heath's Morning Cloud 3, which was destroyed during a terrible storm in 1974, claiming the lives of two men. Oslebury resident and Isle of Wight sailing business owner Sally Tattersall bought the bow and, being a member of the Friends of Arundel's, offered it on permanent loan to the trustees of Sir Edward Heath's Charitable Foundation, which manages Arundel's Sir Edward home.
Thank you, Norma. And moving on to what's on, there are several events in and around Winchester. On Tuesday the 2nd of June, the lunchtime concert at Winchester Cathedral from 1 to 2pm is by Philip Singleton. Trumpet with string quintet and piano. The event is free with a retiring collection. On Saturday the 6th of June, Winchester Action for Climate Change have an open meeting at St Lawrence Parish Room, Colebrook Street, Winchester, from 10:30 to 12 noon. Refreshments are available from 10 a.m. and the event is free. On Tuesday the 9th of June, the lunchtime concert in Winchester Cathedral is by the Winchester Consort from 1 to 2pm. The event is free with a retiring collection. Also on Tuesday the 9th of June at 6pm, the Winchester Writers' Circle have their annual gala evening in the Stripe Building at Winchester University. The gala will include a talk by Lady Antonia Fraser. The event is free to members and students, but costs £5 for non-members. Further details can be obtained from 01962 712 307. That's 01962 712 307. The Winchester Guitar Festival takes place on Friday and Saturday, the 12th and 13th of June, with six concerts. At St Lawrence Church, the Square Winchester and Winchester Discovery Centre. The address given for details is on the website www.winchesterguitarfestival.co.uk. On Saturday the 13th of June at Romsey Abbey, the Bournemouth Bach Choir present an evening of Baroque splendour. Tickets are from £12 to £18 and full details can be obtained from the box office. 01794 512 987. That's 01794 512 987. On stage next week at the Theatre Royal Winchester is Romeo and Juliet, presented by Shakespeare at the Tobacco Factory. And at the Mayflower Theatre Southampton, you can see the musical The Producers. Finally, there is an exhibition titled With the Rifles to Waterloo at the Royal Green Jackets Museum at Peninsula Barracks, Winchester, until the 30th of September. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 29th of May at 5 a.m. and begins at 9:06 p.m. On Wednesday the 3rd of June, it ends at 4:55 a.m. and begins at 9:12 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. And now we continue with items of general news.
Students party in 50s style to end the year. Students do the twist at the university ball. It was like a scene from Happy Days or Greece as hundreds of students parted like it was 1959. Winchester's University Summer Ball had a 1950s theme with dancing to live music by rock and roll band The Jump Jets and milkshakes and free popcorn served in the 1950s themed diner. Excuse me. Many of the undergraduates came looking the part, with girls sporting knee-length prom dresses with flared skirts. Partygoers piled into the photo booth to pose behind the wheel of a pink Cadillac and strumming inflatable guitars. Just under 1,000 celebrated the end of the academic year on Friday night at the University Centre, where there was also some 21st century sounds supplied by the resident student DJs Meg, The Shreds and Jez. Meg the Shed and Drez and Luke, drum and bass act Matrix and Future Bound, and a set from BBC Radio 1's Hugh Stevens. Naomi Carter, Student Union President, 2014-15, said, "The outfits were beautiful. Everyone made such an effort to dress in the theme. It was such a special event. The best, most fun way to round off this academic year. This year's Summer Ball was the perfect end to an amazing university experience," said Leif K. Chaplin, third-year sociology student. And there's lots of lovely pictures. There's a nice one of students celebrating 1950s style with a young man and a young lady clutching a blue guitar. Blow up, by the look of it. There's another one, signing off in style at Winchester University Ball with a group of students all really enjoying themselves and rocking it like mad. And finally, guitars at the ready for students at the ball. And this is a young man surrounded by five ladies, all strumming blow-up guitars.
Future shake-up could see DEFRA's remit strengthened. The general election is finally over, leaving only the euphoria and recriminations. Against most expectations, it produced a conclusive result, and we can now look forward to 5 years of stable government, so what can we expect from the countryside standpoint? Apart from the departure of Liberal Democrat ministers, the new government looks remarkably similar to the last. Liz Truss has been reappointed Secretary of State at DEFRA. She is extremely able and seems destined for higher office, so perhaps it's a question of when rather than if she leaves for a more high-profile department. George Eustace has also been reappointed, although he's now Minister of State under Secretary of State, a promotion. The continuity has been maintained too with the reappointment of Lord De Morley as Parliamentary Under-Secretary of State for the Natural Environment and Science. The final post in the department has now been filled by Rory Stewart, a former soldier and diplomat. He's a fierce critic of the government's policy towards the armed forces, especially cuts in funding. At least he represents a rural constituency, and in the last parliament was treasurer of the all-party parliamentary group on upland farming. There's been a speculation in the media of a major shake-up of the government departments in an attempt to make government more efficient and to save costs. In particular, a report in Farmers Weekly suggested that DEFRA may be abolished and its remit split between other ministers. A reorganisation at some point in the future is highly likely, if only to save money, but as an alternative view is that the department might be strengthened by amalgamation with the Department of Energy and Climate Change and also perhaps take responsibility for planning. This would be a far preferable solution as it would give more emphasis to rural issues with more high-profile position in the Cabinet. We have to wait for the Queen's speech to be given at the State Opening of Parliament on Wednesday, May the 27th, now over. Only then will we know whether there's a legislation with an impact on the countryside. Meanwhile, the badger cull will continue and is likely to be extended. The government is committed to a free vote in the House of Commons on repeal of the Hunting Act 2004, and preliminary moves are already underway. Whether repeal will be achieved, however, is another matter. With so many new MPs in the House of Commons, it will take time to establish what appetite for repeal exists. It would be better not to have a vote at all, rather than one which maintains the status quo. In terms of farming, the government wants to develop a long-term strategy.
Thousands flock to one of the oldest horse fairs. It's a tradition that centuries old and It's a tradition that's centuries old and shows no sign of ending. People travel to Wickham from across the UK and Ireland for one of the biggest and oldest horse fairs in the country. Thousands lined the streets as hundreds of decorated horses and ponies were ridden bareback up and down Winchester Road by boys as young as 12. Other horses and foals waited alongside rows of horse boxes for their turn to be shown to the crowds last Wednesday. Jesse Goddard, whose family have organised the 800-year-old event for more than 80 years, said horses had gone from anywhere from between £50 and £5,000. The 56-year-old from Borden said, "My family has been running it for generations. My grandfather, Jess, turned up one year with just one pony and a truck when he came for the market. If he hadn't been here that day, then there wouldn't have been a fair because the charter would have run out. I've been at this fair all my life. It's just a tradition. We look forward to Wickham. There aren't many of these chartered fairs left now." Excuse me. Sorry. "I've been at this fair all my life. It's just a tradition. We look forward to Wickham. There aren't many of these chartered fairs left now." There was a heavy police presence and numerous officers from the RSPCA who were there as a precaution. However, both organisations said they had no major incidents. RSPCA's Chief Inspector Cathy Hyde said they had treated a horse for an eye infection and removed a dog from a car. She said there had been some minor issues regarding the condition of some of the horses, but the majority of the animals at the fair are in very good condition. Chief Inspector Jason Kenny of Hampshire Police said, "I'd like to thank everyone who attended and the local community for helping the event run so smoothly. In previous years, the fair has seen mass brawls, and in 2013, a man was shot in the head with a marble fired from a catapult."
Chippy is hunting burglars. A carpenter who said he's lost his livelihood to thieves has taken to the streets of Alresford to catch burglars. Steve Cleverly claims police are failing residents after a rash of burglaries this month, including one which saw him lose £3,000 worth of equipment from his garage. The self-employed workman of Chestnut Walk has taken matters into his own hands, patrolling the streets until 5 a.m. with no success. "Enough is enough," he told the Alresford Town Council. "If anyone wants to complain about me driving around the streets, probably where all of you live, I've been there while you're sleeping and parked up. Whatever. I've just been robbed of my livelihood this week and I don't have anything left to work with, to actually go to work anymore. It's the second time in 12 months. He added, When I got done over this time last year, I went and spent £2,500 and replaced everything and then woke up on Tuesday morning and virtually the same tools that were taken last time and more were taken." And there's a picture of Mr. Cleverly in his workshop.
Right, postal workers join in scheme to fight crime. Winchester postal workers have joined forces with Hampshire Constabulary and Neighbourhood Watch to tackle crime. The Royal Mail has launched a pilot scheme calling Mail Watch to act as the eyes and ears of the community. It's been trialled in Winchester with 130 postmen and women. Tony Marsh, Director of Security for Royal Mail, said, "Royal Mail postmen and women collect and deliver mail 6 days a week and have almost unrivalled knowledge of the communities they serve." Chief Inspector Darius Hamatpour, District Commander for Winchester, said, "Mail Watch is an innovative and exciting opportunity where the police, Neighbourhood Watch and Royal Mail are working together to ensure our communities continue to feel safe, valued and supported. By sharing information across all three organisations, it will allow postmen and women to report any suspicious activity they may come across during their daily rounds, whilst at the same time receiving such information from police and Neighbourhood Watch. For many years, the police have enjoyed a great working partnership with Neighbourhood Watch, so it makes perfect sense to join us up with Royal Mail." Margaret Philly, President of Hampshire and Isle of Wight Neighbourhood Watch Association, added, "To be able to enlist and formalise the help of our local postal delivery teams, who play such an important part in our local communities, in being the extension of Neighbourhood Watch principle of providing rapid intelligence to our neighbourhood policing teams, will be a tremendous boost to ensuring safer communities. And there's a picture of some people at the Royal Mail staff with PC Matt Flynn and Neighbourhood Watch coordinator Sandy Vine, all smiling and looking ready for getting their fees out.
Help for the Lonely, a Winchester-based charity, has joined forces with Hampshire County Council to combat loneliness among older people. Brendan Care has launched a range of new clubs across the county to help with the reported rising number of incidents of isolated living, giving elderly people the opportunity to meet like-minded people and to take part in activities. The charity's goal for 2015 is to open a series of club meetings at weekends across a number of venues. Head of Club Service, Edward Ingleton, said, "Sadly, for many older people, the weekend is often the loneliest time of the week. In a growing number of cases, older people may not have friends or family around them, and a social club is the only way to break the cycle of loneliness that can be so debilitating to their well-being." In Winchester, the new Saturday Club has been launched in Badger Farm and Week, where a number of similar activities are already run. One of its regular members, 75-year-old Lorna, said, "I got an invitation to the Brendan Cares Club after I'd had a heart attack and a stroke and lost most of my sight. Through the club, I've been able to meet many more people and have really enjoyed all of the meetings so far. If you'd like more information, do please contact the support team on 01962 857 099. I'll give you that number again, 01962, of course, 857-099.
Reaping the rewards of pop-up shop. Members of the Winchester Horticulture Society are celebrating after hosting a successful pop-up shop. People gathered at their annual plant sale, held at the Brook Centre early this month, to dig up some bargains. The store was well stocked with flowering plants and vegetables, and whole trayfuls were carried away. It is the Society's main fundraising event of the year, with the proceeds helping to fund their monthly meetings and activities. The group meets on the second Wednesday every month at the Winchester Club in Worthy Lane. There is usually a guest speaker and two gardening-related competitions. The Society also arranges garden visits and social events. It was founded in 1881 and is affiliated to the Royal Horticultural Society. The next big event is the Autumn Show at Badgers Farm Community Centre in August. Call 01962 866 818. That's 01962 866 818 for more details. And there's a lovely picture of them sitting behind their cakes and holding the most wonderful array of plants. So well worth a visit.
Shake up on City Council. The leader of Winchester City Council is set to be ousted as the Conservatives take advantage of their new strengthened Guildhall majority to shake up their high command. Stephen Godfrey was elected leader of the Tory group after challenging Frank Pearson at a meeting earlier this month. Councillor Godfrey, previously deputy leader and portfolio holder for finance, was confirmed as the new boss at City Mayor-making ceremony on Wednesday night. Councillor Vicky Weston, who resigned as deputy leader over the Silverhill development controversy in February, has been nominated to return to her post, while Councillor Godfrey said two cabinet positions were set to change hands. Meanwhile, the Liberal Democrats have elected Councillor Lucille Thompson as their new leader after Kelsey Lerney lost her seat at Littleton and Hairstock at May the 7th elections. Elected in February following the resignation of Councillor Rob Humby over the Council's High Court defeat on Silver Hill, Councillor Pearson said he would be a safe pair of hands, but admitted that at the time he may not be in post for long. Councillor Godfrey pledged to tackle the new disillusionment with the City Council's transparency and engagement with residents. He said, "The first thing is to deal with the challenges we have in front of us. My aspiration is to have to continue to improve Winchester and to make it a good place to live, work and visit. We're looking at how we can safeguard the council's services and make sure they're the best that we can offer. The new cabinet met for the first time last Thursday to appoint new committee chairs and discuss the Silver Hill scheme, new council flats at Victoria House and house building at Springvale, Swanmore. Councillors Weston and Thompson had not responded to a request for comment at the time of going to press.
Blaze destroys John Gaunt. Just 3 years after a Hampshire community rallied to save their local pub, it's been destroyed after fire ripped through it. Customers had to be evacuated after a passerby noticed flames at the historic John Gaunt Inn in Horsebridge near Kingsombourne. It was almost completely destroyed by the blaze on Thursday night at around 9:30 p.m. Around 20 firefighters spent 4 hours battling the flames which spread to the roof. They were called back at around 4 a.m. on Friday morning after the roof reignited, according to a police officer at the scene. Richard George, who was in the pub at the time, said, a stranger put his head round the door and said, "Do you know, there's a fire upstairs in one of the rooms." My wife and another person went outside while the landlady rushed upstairs, eventually with the fire extinguisher, to do what she could. My wife returned and said, "Everybody out, we're on fire." It went from nothing to quite a blaze in a matter of probably 10 minutes. A Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service spokesman said the building is 100% smoke damaged and 75% damaged by fire. She said the fire spread to the roof as well, and we used 2 high-pressure hose reels, 2 jets and 18 sets of breathing apparatus to put it out. On Friday morning, a visibly upset Laura Davis, the landlady, ventured inside with several others to check the damage. She didn't want to comment. An investigation has now been launched into how it started, but is not thought to be suspicious, according to the Hampshire Police. Peter Storey, parish clerk for Swanbourne, said the parish council was shocked to learn of the disastrous fire at the John Gaunt pump and every sympathy with the landlady and hopes that the pub will be able to reopen in the not-too-distant future. In 2012, the pub was saved by local residents who campaigned against a planning application to turn it into flats. It was originally named the Railway Inn, but later it changed its name to reflect the local links to the Duke of Lancaster, whose descendants formed the Royal House of Lancaster.
In activities, 1.7 million cost to services. Lack of exercise costs health services in Winchester around 1.7 million per year, a leading heart charity has warned. The cost of treating long-term problems linked to low physical activity is on the rise, the British Heart Foundation claims. Among these conditions is coronary heart disease. Around about 3,500 people in Winchester District live with the disease. According to the figures, costing £80,000 a year in primary and secondary care. National guidelines recommend that adults should get at least 150 minutes of moderate intensity physical activity a week. Moderate intensity activity will raise your heart rate and make you breathe faster and feel warmer. The report also reveals that 44% of British adults do no moderate exercise. Catherine Kelly, Director of Prevention, Survival and Support at the BHF, said, "It is staggering the amount of money that inactivity is costing the health service in Winchester every year. Encouraging people to be more active and less sedentary will help reduce their risk of heart disease and will save millions of pounds for the health service. The British Heart Foundation research has shown that even making small, more active changes to your daily routine can improve your heart health. If it were to ease the burden of this country's physical and inactivity cost, people need to take action."
Celebrating a milestone. A charity that helps connect visually impaired people across Winchester with their local news has celebrated a milestone. the Winchester Talking newspaper, which records stories from the Chronicle onto memory sticks for people to listen to, held its 25th AGM recently. One of the founding members, Peter Bogan, 94, attended. WTN chairman John Richard said, "I think the reason it's been so successful is because it keeps sight-impaired people in touch with their local news." The Talking newspaper now has 80 volunteers.
A new scheme has been launched to support cultural events and activities taking place in the Winchester district. The City Council will award individual grants up to £2,000 on a first-come, first-served basis, with a total of £10,000 available for this financial year. The grants could be for festivals, major cultural events or arts activities which fit the aims and aspirations of the cultural strategy. This includes encouraging economic prosperity, sustaining and developing visitor appeal, attracting new investment to the district and improving social well-being. Kate Cloud, Head of Economy and Arts, said, "These new grants complement the arts advisory service we offer and other cultural activities across the city, including the cultural network events. Cultural organisations must be based within the district and show evidence of need for grant funding. For more information or to apply, go online at winchestergov.uk/cultural grants.
The Wolf's Win. The May meeting of the Winchester Winemakers Circle saw the annual quiz evening, and for Leo and Yvonne Wolf, this was quite an evening to remember. The first of the evening's quizzes featured a general knowledge and wine-themed questions, and the second one was a picture quiz. The Wolf team managed to achieve the highest scores in both quizzes and walked off with both of the evening's prizes. The winner of the Wine of the Year competition for the Meadham Cup was Don Cox with his sweet elderflower wine.
Helping to enhance cohesion of church. The Diocese of Winchester is hoping to strengthen ties with local churches following the appointment of a new mission canon. The Reverend Canon Mark Collinson has been named Canon Principal of the new School of Mission, which aims to help parish churches make changes in their communities. He will lead advice and training for lay people and clergy. A cathedral spokesman said he would help foster a culture of mission throughout the diocese. As a residentiary canon of Winchester Cathedral, Mark will also be a member of the chapter and take part in the cathedral's governance, worship and work. Since being ordained in 1998, Reverend Collinson has spent most of his time in mainland Europe as chaplain of Amsterdam's Christ Church and area dean of the Netherlands. Reverend Collinson said it was a great privilege to join the diocese and lead the school. He added, "I'm really excited about strengthening the connection between parishes and Winchester Cathedral during this period of great renewal within the church." The Right Reverend Tim Dakin, Bishop of Winchester, said he brings a wealth of experience of working alongside teams of clergy and lay people to enable churches to grow in spirituality and daily discipleship.
Range of Styles in Garden Exhibition. An outdoor exhibition showcasing work by more than 40 artists from across the country has returned to a Romsey Garden Centre. Art in the Garden at Sir Harold Hillier's Gardens in Amberfield is marking its 16th year by displaying 100 sculptures by 46 artists, including several from Hampshire. The variety of sculptures create a stimulating and diverse exhibition, ranging from abstract to figurative pieces in many different materials, such as glass, metal, marble, stone, ceramics, acrylic, aluminium, and reclaimed materials. Since 1977, Hampshire County Council has been the sole trustee of the Hillier Gardens. Leader Councillor Roy Perry said, "Each year, when the sculptures are displayed, it is always fascinating to see how our visitors engage with the art." Art in the Garden has proved to be a popular attraction for visitors over the years. The artworks on display add something extra special, particularly at this time of year when gardens spring back into life. This year's exhibition will be particularly impressive with Magnolia Avenue, the Heather Garden, Pond and Bog Garden, and the newly extended Winter Garden becoming outdoor galleries for the display of sculpture. The inspiration that drives artists to create their sculptures for the exhibition can be from a variety of sources. The contrast of styles and technique offers a fascinating range, from the stylized Art Deco sculptures of local artist Paul Harvey to the Glass Clouds by Adam Aronson. Art in the Garden curator Joe Field said, "New for 2015 is a curious door leading into a trompe l'œil or visual effect shady grotto, which will intrigue the children and adults alike. The large oak door is reminiscent of a bygone age and adds a new aspect to the exhibition." Art in the Garden runs until October the 18th. And this trompe l'œil is really quite fascinating. It's in a solid wall, there's an open door, and there is a picture of a staircase ahead, and it looks as if you can walk through the door and up the stairs. All just fallacy, really. Fantasy.
Risk to wildlife in dried-up pond. Wildlife attempting to leave their dried-up Bishop's Waltham Pond faced a perilous journey under the threat from cars and predators, conservationists have warned. Ducklings were killed in traffic last week as they tried to migrate from the North Pond, which drained rapidly last week. Swans, cygnets and moorhen could be picked off by foxes if the permanent home is not built, North Pond Conservation Group says. Water levels in part of the pond supplied by the Upper Hamble fell from 68 centimetres to zero over a few days. Portsmouth Water regularly extracts water to provide for thousands of homes and businesses. However, the draining has come quicker and earlier than usual this year, leaving some chicks too young to safely leave. Fish, including carp and bream, are also at risk, according to Bishop's Waltham Parish Fishing Club. Volunteers attempting to rescue the fish, but could not reach them. Swans and cygnets crossed safely to South Pond on Tuesday, but will face similar dangers next year if nothing is done, according to Barry Jerome, chairman of the North Pond Conservation Group. He said, "As the water level continues to drop, then all of them will be at risk from predators, in particularly the local foxes." A Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust spokesman said, "The drainage was seasonal and Portsmouth Water's work is necessary to supply water for local people."
Enjoy traditional dance. Coldon Common will see one of the oldest continuing traditions of rural England. Winchester Morris men will be performing the Cotswold Morris dance style at the community centre in St Fygor Way. The event will be held at 7:45 p.m. on Wednesday 17th of June before the group move off to the Bugle Pub in Twyford. References to the dance date back to 600 years, gaining sufficient popularity by the time of Elizabeth I that it was soon performed across the country. It is believed that agricultural changes and the migration to cities led to a decline in Morris dancing during the 19th century.
Rowathon raises foundation cash. There's a photograph of students at Peter Simmons College here, who are swimming team members, pictured presenting a cheque to Alex Lewis. Winchester students who rowed over 1,000 kilometres in a day have donated cash to the Hampshire father who inspired them. Quadruple amputee Alex Lewis was given £393.21 by students at his former college, Peter Simmons, after a machine rowathon in aid of his foundation. the Peter Simmons swimming team set out to row 100 kilometres on the machines, but had gone so far by lunchtime they kept going to finish at 13 times the distance. Alex said, "They were so enthusiastic that I can quite believe that they rowed this distance. Quite a feat. I think that should have been. I can't quite believe, but they left the tee off. They were so enthusiastic that I can't believe that they rowed this distance. It was quite a feat."
Residents revolt over unnecessary works by Charlotte Neal. Angry Alsford residents and business owners are calling for money-wasting bus stop work to be stopped. As part of the £297,000 scheme, the County Council is moving a bus stop in West Street, but local people think it is dangerous, needless and infuriating. The stop, which is used three times a week by a local hopper service, will be moved from outside Shapler restaurant to opposite the co-op and another bus stop. Residents have said that work is pointless because it could create traffic problems and funding for the current service may stop. Also, Chamber of Commerce has requested that the works, which started last week, continue without the bus stop. Chairman Simon Evans says the Chamber sees it as unnecessary and a waste of money. It's part of the regeneration of the West Street area, which is a great idea, but moving the bus stop from where it is into a dedicated space, which will allow the bus to stop in the carriageway, we believe is extremely dangerous on a busy part of the road. The works were approved by Councillor Sean Woodward, Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment, last year. It also includes a zebra crossing in Jacqueline's Lane near Perrin School, a crossing point in West Street, a footway widening on the eastern side of Jacqueline's Lane and both sides of West Street, and a carriageway resurfacing at the West Street and Jacqueline's Lane junction. At the decision day, Councillor Woodward said, "It is important this junction is improved to ensure pupils, staff and other pedestrians can continue to cross the road safely on this busy route to Perrin School. These measures have been developed in partnership with the Town Council and the Alsford Society to improve the local environment and pedestrian safety. They build on the success of Broad Street improvements and aim to enhance the quality of the street environment in harmony with its conservation status." The Chronicle has been inundated with complaints from the residents about the bus stop plan. Susan Kirby of Ragamuffin in West Street said, "As a resident and a local business owner, I am shocked to hear the unnecessary spend on creating a new bus stop in a town where it's clear that this bus stop will not have a regular bus service using it." Eddie Rich, of Alsford-based design company Richly Creative, said, "I would like to see common sense prevail just for once." Lisa Griffiths, chairman of the Alsford Town Council, said the plans were put up for public consultation last year, but there has been no feedback until now. Hampshire County Council has not responded for comment at the time of going to press.
Hat fair to be the craziest yet. Winchester is set to be transformed as more than 200 gloriously bonkers performers descend on the city for the country's largest outdoor arts festival. At the official launch, organisers reveal what the public could expect from this year's Hat Fair. The three-day festival will see performances, activities and workshops around the city in 20 locations, including the bus and train stations, which is new for 2015. Michelle Walker said, "The last count, 286 performers have been scheduled for the event, which starts on July the 3rd and continues until July the 5th. And there's a photograph of a smiling Michelle Walker, Artistic Director of the Hat Fair, at the launch of the 2015 festival.
This play has powerful dementia message. A critically acclaimed radio play exploring the impact of dementia could be heard on the wards of Winchester Hospital to mark a national awareness drive. Winchester Hospital Radio brought Grandma Remember Me to Royal Hampshire County Hospital last week to spread empowering and supportive messages to patients. It was first broadcast last Wednesday, halfway through Dementia Awareness Week. Belinda Lazenby's play is written from the perspective of Lily, a child whose grandmother develops Alzheimer's. It explores their changing relationship and the importance of memories. In an exclusive hospital radio interview broadcast after the play, Ms. Lazenby said, "The play has been written with honesty, humour, truth and love. And it is also all about empowering and raising awareness and understanding. One of the big messages of the play is that it is possible to live well with dementia."
This is from News in Brief. New Year fall led to death of a man. A man died from septicemia after falling and trapping his arm behind the radiator at his home in Bishop's Waltham. An inquest heard how Derek Cuthbert, 82, at Godfrey Pink Way, died at Salisbury Hospital after he fell in his ensuite bathroom on New Year's Eve. He reached out in front where the radiator stood after his legs gave way and got his arm stuck behind the attached towel rail. He suffered severe burns. Senior coroner for South Hampshire, Graham Short, said, "He was a sort that didn't want to make a fuss. It's clear to me that because he died as a result of the burn, ultimately it was the burn that led to him getting into the situation where he had to have an operation, get an infection on the ward, which led to septicemia and death."
Thanks for help. Volunteers have thanked Winchester residents for their generosity after raising nearly £1,000 for muscular dystrophy research over two events. The city branch of Muscular Dystrophy UK recently raised £796 at their annual charity tennis tournament at Dittleton Tennis Club, 36 players turning out to play, but many left when heavy rain fell. Winchester volunteer Barbara Anderson said, "Some went home and returned later for a splendid lunch and social occasion, with more optimistic players who had remained and played some enjoyable tennis in spite of the English weather. This was a great success as usual, due mainly to the super people who supported us." She also thanked people who gave to a street collection in Winchester earlier this month. The charity funding research into genetic muscular dystrophy condition raised £193.89.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Lorna Chorley and Michael Turner. And thanks to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Norma York.
Bye.
Brian Woodruff.
Goodbye.
And Michael Wyard.
Goodbye.
And from me, Maria Head, goodbye. I hope you have a lovely week. Perhaps we'll get some summery weather. Mm-hmm. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label in your wallet, please ensure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet. Thank you.